are now listening to Cults in the Catacombs. These films exist.
Eat it. Yes. Eat it with your fucking mouth. Eat it with your sad little mouth, you beta cucks.
Yeah, you idiot.
Yeah, bite down on this.
That's a hell of a way to start this episode. Welcome to Cult Cinema Catacombs, folks.
Speaking of bite down on this.
Yeah. Bite down on something.
I'm biting down on something. Bite down on
something. So, before we get to talking about our movie this episode, we've got a point of business to discuss here.
Yes, very important.
And that is, they made a fucking remake of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yeah, they did.
And
I'm still not sure they did. I still have never heard anything about this, and I am pretty hip deep in film. Like, I hear a lot about it.
It's coming to theaters next month, in April. They just dropped the teaser trailer for it, which is all of 25 seconds long.
Hmm.
And it has an R rating.
Who's in it?
Nobody. Oh, wait. No, I take that back.
I was going to say there's somebody.
No, there is a somebody playing the role of the boss that the girl goes to get the job with.
Yeah.
So in the original movie, it was Joanna Cassidy from Blade Runner and Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Sure.
In the remake, it's Nicole Richie.
Oh my god. And that's
so,
it?
Yeah, so we have one half of The Simple Life starring in this movie.
And no one else.
Yes.
They're burying this movie. This movie is being buried.
This movie is a tax shelter, I think, for somebody. I really think it is, because I don't even think Warner Brothers is releasing this remake. It's just like coming out of nowhere.
We're gonna have to do a special episode in May when we talk about this movie, aren't we?
Yes.
Probably. Let me take a look here. So Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. It stars June Squibb and Nicole Richie.
June Squibb. Haven't heard that name in a minute.
June Squibb.
Features newcomers Danielle Tremaine Hansley, Miles Fowler, Ayeth Richardson, and Tyreek Withers.
I'm sorry, what was that name?
What was that one?
Ayeth Richardson.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, just gonna belch there. I'm sorry. Oh, God. The executive producer of this movie is Tyra Banks.
Oh
boy. And this is now we have to watch it.
Oh,
This is being released through her own production company.
What?
Smize Productions.
What?
I'm ready.
This is unhinged.
Yeah.
Just like Tyra.
And because of the pandemic and everything, this movie is getting a massive theatrical release. God,
nice.
June Squibb is 94 years old.
And she's in this movie.
She's playing the babysitter in this movie. Good Lord. You know, if she dies before this movie comes out, we know what will kill her.
Shit.
It'll be so surreal. But yeah, they've made a remake of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Tyra Banks felt that movie needed to be made. So
did she just like the movie? I'm trying to figure out what her logic is, which is a fool's errand. I understand this.
It's Tyra. There's no understanding Tyra.
Is there? Because I don't think that she uses drugs. Because if she used drugs, she'd be way louder about how weird she is.
It's just mental illness. We all know.
You know what we need? You know what we need? We need a remake. We need a remake. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's. I don't think that's what it was.
No. No, she was. She got called into a meeting and was sold on the idea of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yeah, no, this Redux. Was. This was, yeah. Yeah. We gotta do this.
Some guaranteed moneymaker. And she will. You mark my words. She might not be listed in that cast. She will be in this movie.
Oh, she's she'll make an appearance somewhere. Yeah.
Tyra? Tyra, I know you're listening. Come on the show. We'd love to talk to you down. About literally anything you want to talk about. You can talk about how mean Naomi Campbell is for like an hour, and I don't care.
And then this one's for you, Mr. Farmer.
Oh, shit.
The Unnamed Footage Festival this year announced that a new version of director Robbie Banfitch's found footage horror film, The Outwaters, will debut at the festival called The Outwaters Detective Audio Version.
A new version?
Often, and here's the official press release for this. Often in found footage horror, the images we see are presented as evidence in a case, but the greater narrative stops there. We are bringing Robbie Banfitch's cosmic horror masterpiece back to the screen for a badge holder only sneak preview with a new iteration that transforms it into an entirely different viewing experience.
What?
Now the visuals are paired with narration and observation of Detective Stacy and Detective Nolan reviewing the footage, trying to discuss and uncover what really happened and how the existence of this footage is even possible.
Sure.
So they didn't recut the movie. They just had the two just people
just
do commentary on it.
It's great. That's great. God damn it, Banfitch. He might be a genius. He might be a genius because
that's incredible.
They released The Outwaters, and then they released like three supplemental things for The Outwaters. Like whatever was on the memory card, and then you know, like there was like three supplementals, and now this, and it's been a year. It's been a year for this movie to be out, right? Mm-hmm. I think. Because Skinamarink and It came out at this in the same year.
Around this, yeah, it came out last year around the same time, yes.
Jesus. He might be a genius. We'll see. We'll see.
Crazy like a fox, or you know whatever what they
is,
say.
You know what else is crazy like a fox? Idris Elba's butthole.
I want to watch it.
I want to see that butthole.
I don't think this is the butthole cut. I'm sorry, guys. But
I don't want to anymore.
I'm really curious to see what cut this is when it comes to the special effects. So we're watching Cats, folks. The 2018 movie started the pandemic. Because Cats came out and then COVID blew up like it did. So I'm convinced Cats is responsible for this.
Do you think this is the version where Judy Dench has people hands and sticks two fingers up Idris Elba's cat butthole?
Oh, yes.
I heard about that version.
See, yeah. So,
to expel glands, damn.
Yeah. They just got to work them glands, them Elba's glands.
Yeah, I hope that you get to see, that this is the version where you see her hands. Now, they don't there's no expressing of glands in this movie.
Are you sure?
Yes. But I remember when I saw this twice in the theater, actually.
Woof.
The first time Chris and I went to go see it, and we were just in complete shell shock over what we witnessed on the screen, because one, I've seen the stage show and it's an interesting show.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I don't
like people that close to me.
It's a dance show.
It's an abstract show to introduce kids to Broadway, I guess.
Or anyone that's not into Broadway but likes to have grown men climb on them in cat outfits.
It may unlock a fetish you didn't know you had.
Yeah, right. You're going to end up in an elevator with Roy and I.
So Craig tells this story. This is a second degree story that I have about Cats. This is a good friend of his worked one of those 90s hotlines where people would call and say what Broadway tickets are available, and you tell them what shows they can have and how much and what seats and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And this guy's operating. He's like, well, we have Cats. We have the matinee, blah, blah, blah. And you can hear the lady on the other side of the phone saying, yeah, they have Cats. Do you want Cats? Okay, so there's this cat, and they're like this, and then there's this cat, and they're like this. And at the end, they take one of the cats, and they blow it up into the roof on a tire. Yeah, we'll take two tickets to Cats.
It's great.
One of my favorite crank stories of all time.
But, yeah, this... the musical is something else. It really is. So they've been trying to make a film version of this musical for the longest time. Originally, it was going to be a Steven Spielberg, Don Bluth animated film, and that fell through. I think that probably would have worked better than what we
got.
That
makes sense.
Yeah. So when it was announced Cats was finally being turned into a film, they were being very, very top secret on exactly what they were doing. And then the trailer was released. And we witnessed the Lovecraftian horror.
Yeah, only way to describe it.
That was People Cats. And so I was like, I need to see this thing. This looks like a disaster. And sure enough, it was. The version that we're going to watch is a more cleaned up version than what was originally released on December 19th, 2019. But Universal was so embarrassed by the cut that was released in theaters that they announced that they would be releasing a new version of the movie with updated CGI. So this is why I saw it a second time. And this time when I saw it a second time, it was actually at the Alamo Drafthouse in the rowdy version. So that way we can make noise while watching the film and just like roast it and do what we need to do. I'm going to let you know that between the version I saw when it first came out and then the retweaked version, I saw no difference.
Huh.
None. It still looked like Snapchat filter the movie.
Yeah.
It's how many eyes were on the original release of that movie before it got released to the public? And they all said, yeah, looks great.
Well, I don't think any of them.
Fuck it.
I don't think any of them said it. Yeah, it looks great. I think
no one would.
I think what it was is like we have a hard deadline to release this film. So it doesn't matter whether it looks great or not. It's going to screen. Well, so it's happening.
Like, there was one person who knew it was going to be a disaster and they didn't listen to him. And that was Andrew Lloyd Webber. Andrew Lloyd Webber, actually, while the film was being released, he got to see the dailies on it, and he sent them a notice saying, quote, you've got a car crash on your hands unless you get a grip on this thing. He never got a reply. And so he was so distraught by this movie musical Cats that he adopted a Havanese puppy and had the dog registered as a therapy pet for him.
Oh, That is the most catty thing that I think you could possibly do.
That's I don't want to get dark. Bitch. I don't want to get dark, but do we know for sure that the Cats movie didn't kill his son?
Jesus. You don't want to be dark. So
I'm just saying, do we know? I'm just saying, do we know?
You're just asking questions. You're just asking questions.
I'm just asking questions. I'm not saying the Cats movie killed Andrew Lloyd Webber's beautiful son.
The movie does have a cancerous vibe to it.
Can I ask a serious question?
Yeah.
And you guys will. This is an education for me.
Okay.
Has there been? Because in my estimation, and from what I've seen, I haven't seen it. If there has been, has there been a well? And you know, there are things that could be considered, but I'm going to say modern. Has there been a modern adaptation of a big theater production to screen that wasn't a train wreck?
Yes.
Okay.
The producers in Chicago.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
My bad.
Those are the only two I could think of as the producers in Chicago. Yeah. Because
granted, there are a few I haven't seen. I am so sorry.
Well, no, I'll take that back. There was three.
What was the third?
The third one would be Steven Spielberg's remake of West Side Story. That was
I
haven't seen it yet.
That was phenomenal. I was shocked at how well done that film was.
Okay.
I haven't seen that. I'm told Tick, Tick, Boom is very good. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that one's pretty good. Tick, Tick, Boom is pretty good also, but...
Okay.
That makes sense to me. It's kind of a smaller...
Because, I mean, I want to put Hairspray on that list, but the biggest reason why I can't put Hairspray on that list is John Travolta.
It's not a train wreck.
It's not a train wreck, but at the same time, he was so miscast in the role of...
There are so many people that could have done it. Why didn't they get Firestein? He would have said yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge stunt casting. And it didn't help the rumors for John Travolta.
No.
And Christopher Walken is so good in that movie.
Well, and my thought was I am purposefully, by choice, like Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive, I am outside of musical theater now. You guys are dragging me back in, but I willfully walked away after college.
I won't stop.
But... My thing is recognizable to average everyday Midwestern people musicals. Mm-hmm. When I'm thinking about those, I'm thinking Les Mis, which
rough.
Yeah, I'm thinking Cats.
Could have been so much better than what it was. Rough.
Chicago, you are right. That one was successful. That I saw that a couple times. Yeah, it was great. So that one is the one that defies my logic.
Dreamgirls had its moments, but Dreamgirls has its flaws. I mean, the casting of Beyonce, Jennifer Hudson, and Aniki Nonarose were great.
Yeah.
And so was Eddie Murphy. I mean, I think
a lot of good choices.
I think if Norbit didn't happen, Eddie Murphy probably would have won the Oscar. But then Norbit happened.
A lot of things could have happened didn't happen.
However, Jamie Foxx, as much as I
Norbit
love Jamie
Foxx, 9/11.
As much as I love Jamie Foxx, he was so wrongfully cast in the Dreamgirls movie. I would not have cast him. So, and that's saying a lot because I love him. So.
My problem with the Dreamgirls movie is not even really with the movie. It's just that I don't think that it works as a movie.
No,
it works. It doesn't. And I think that's a big problem for a lot of them. I think that's where it falls apart.
And I think that's why Chicago and the producers work because the really did a good job of giving you the feeling that you're watching something on stage.
Yeah. Because the producers, the way they did the producers is they did a little tweaking for the humor to fit the movie. But it was like watching a professionally filmed version of the Broadway show.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
Beat for beat. With Chicago
was the same way.
Chicago, they found a brilliant way to take this abstract show and make it make sense for a movie. It's like, okay, well, you know, this is basically vaudevillian acts that are telling the story. What's happening? How do we do this? Okay, well, it's all in her head, and it worked.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Then you got movies like not only this, but Dear Evan Hansen.
I don't want to talk about it.
The biggest problem with the film adaptation of Dear Evan Hansen is not only in the casting, but the movie all unfortunately shines a light on why we shouldn't be rooting for these characters.
I saw it on stage, I called it, everyone's a liar and you're going to have to get good with that, the musical.
Yeah, it's that it's Breaking Glass, the musical. Wasn't that the name of the book that the guy stole and got on Oprah with?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Million Little Pieces, yeah.
Million Little Pieces, yes.
It kind of was.
Why I'm so nervous about Wicked. I'm so nervous about
Wicked. I want it to be good. God, I want it to be good.
I want it to be good. I want it to work, but at the same time, a track record with modern musicals right now, I mean... Yeah. It's not that strong. It's really not.
I was burnt so bad by Les Mis.
It's so frustrating. It could have been so good.
I saw before getting rid of Max, I watched The Color Purple.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I did not like it.
I love Danielle Brooks and I want the best for her. I worry for her the way that I am like a parent would worry for her. And I think she's the same age as me.
So the scene when the big scene when Seeley finally stands up to Mister and
spoiler
got that
alert.
And that incredible song "I'm Here." The way Fantasia sings it in the movie was not as powerful as I remember her performance on the Tony Awards when they had her perform it. And on top of that, they glamorized Seeley. And I'm like, she's not supposed to be glamorous here. She's old. She's supposed to be homely. She's not supposed to look like she just went in to have glamour shots done, which is exactly what Fantasia Brino looked like in that sequence. And that one sequence alone sums up everything that was wrong with the film. Even the actor that they chose to play Mister.
Who plays Mister? I don't remember.
It was, oh God, let me go. Hold on 1 second. Mister is played by Coleman Domingo.
Okay. Oh. He's one of the world's most beautiful men.
Yeah, he's the guy now. Like, he is the guy in Hollywood. So,
He's the second most beautiful man on the planet. The first plays Harpo in The Color Purple.
Now, yeah, Danielle Brooks is good, and I'm glad she got an Oscar nomination for the film. But it's just, it should have been so much better than what it was.
I think that's the problem. What you just described is it is almost impossible, no matter who you are, to capture the dynamicism of a stage performance on film.
It's mm-hmm. true.
It really... I think that's the problem.
And then with this film.
We have to talk about it again.
Cats. The fact that anyone in Hollywood had the audacity to think that this would work as a movie to begin with needs to be patted on the head and sent out into traffic to play, because there's no plot to Cats. There's none.
No.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're not supposed to be.
That lady on the phone is right. That's what Cats is about.
Yeah. And so for the movie, they came up with a plot. And the plot is just so. The white cat from the show
who's
that really
just a dancer in the stage show. For those of you not familiar, she's just a featured dancer. She's great.
She now has a name. Her name is Victoria, and she's the main focus of the show. Of the movie, as you'll see, she's this cat that was thrown out and abandoned, and she's trying to find her way in this new world where she discovers the Jellicle cats. And
so she's like the Greek chorus of this. That's what they create out of her. So she gets to be the introduction.
Because she's basically there to dance, and she's a great dancer. I felt so bad for this actress, Francesca Hayward, because this was her very first film, and she got the shittiest position to be put in with this thing.
That's not fair. Like, she had a moment.
By having the weight of the film placed upon her shoulders. And they even wrote a brand new song for her to sing in the show, Beautiful Ghosts, which was co-written between Andrew Lloyd Webber and Taylor Swift. And
weirdest
Taylor Swift,
collaboration ever, but okay.
Yeah, well, and
but also
Taylor Swift, it's a movie.
Awesome.
And Taylor Swift, she plays a Bombalina, and you'll see what they've done with her character when it comes to McCavity. And I mean, just this whole plot that they developed was such a desperate attempt to try to make the musical make sense. It doesn't work. It absolutely doesn't work.
I'm so mad this wasn't a Don Bluth animated movie. Like, I just keep thinking about it. It's really derailed my thought process for this whole intro. Because I'm like, man.
And I will let you know right now, I mean, when it comes to the, I mean, this, because this is a stacked cast of a movie. But the person you're probably going to feel sorry for the most in this film is Ian McKellen.
I mean, I feel sorry for him generally for the shit that he has to put up with. So, yeah.
I mean, the stuff they have him do as Gus, the theater cat, you sit there.
The best cat, first of all.
You just shake your head and you're like, dude, you're Ian McKellen. Why are you doing that? You're gonna say that a lot about a lot of the people in this movie. You're gonna be shaking your head.
You're like, good for this.
Why are you doing this? Why? I mean, James Corden makes sense. He's shameless. He would do this bullshit.
And surprised he's not hawking Nespresso or whatever while he's in this movie.
He might be. I haven't seen it.
But he has a very James Corden moment in this film, also, that you could tell they decided to just throw in there just because it's James Corden.
Yeah, he throws a fit about an omelet.
Yeah, Does he get with Toons as the driving cat and they do karaoke in car?
And then, of course, we've got Rebel Wilson and as Jenny Anydots. And her sequence is probably the most eldritch sequence in the entire film. You'll see.
It's non-Euclidean.
It's just so...
And that's so frustrating to me because as a person who... can dance, but I wouldn't put myself like up against professional dancers. If I were to be in the show, that's the role I would play, is Jenny Anydots.
Yeah, wait till you see what they do with her.
I can't wait for them to make me never ever want to be in the show.
And then the character Mr. Mistopheles, the magic cat.
Yep.
For some reason, they felt he needed to look like Robert Smith from The Cure.
I mean,
that's
listen.
A choice.
If you have the opportunity to make somebody Robert Smith from The Cure, you probably should go ahead and make them Robert Smith from The Cure.
Yes, you do. You take that chance.
And then, of course, we all know with Jason Derulo, they had to erase
Jason Derulo.
They had to erase his bulge as the Rum Tum Tugger.
Bring back the bulge.
There is a cut somewhere with all of the worst shit in it. It will be released someday.
We deserve it.
Yes.
And then
we had to watch and now the screaming starts. We had to watch this Christmas Carol.
And I'm going to let you know right now, not only is it uncomfortable to see Idris Elba as a naked with no body part cat with McCavity, but the final 5 minutes of the film.
Did you say he doesn't have hair?
He's a short hair cat, but the way that they did the short hair on him, it made him look like one of those cats that are hairless.
I can't believe he even plays the part, because if you know the show, McCavity's a ginger cat. He's very tall and thin.
Oh no, they've changed the character drastically.
It's the words.
I want you all to take a step back from where we are. As human beings,
I would love to pick apart these lyrics for another 2 hours.
Can we just? I want everybody to stop for a second and center themselves. Okay, a sentence was said on this show, and I just want to repeat it just out of context, so you can hear how insane it is. Oh no, Idris Elba is a short hair cat in this. And his hair is so short, he looks like one of those hairless cats. Idris Elba is a hairless cat, is a sentence we said as human beings.
And then I'm going to
burn it all down.
Burn it to the ground. We're done. Just wrap it up. Right now,
the last 5 minutes of the movie, when you're being addressed by Judi Dench and she's staring into your soul.
Now, Judi Dench is old Deuteronomy, right?
Yeah, she is old Deuteronomy.
Which is itself a pretty weird choice.
Yeah, so old Deuteronomy is now a female cat, and this is not just any ordinary female cat. They decided to make her one of those, what are they called? The doll-like cats, the ones that are just like big and fluffy and fat.
Oh, ragdoll?
Yeah. Ragdoll. She's a ragdoll cat now. So old Deuteronomy is a ragdoll cat and is a giant ball of white fluff. She does this leg stretch thing at one point in the movie that is so disturbing that you just want to bleach your eyes. And then when she addresses you at the end of the film, you're going to be very uncomfortable for 5 minutes.
I mean, I'm uncomfortable now.
But I will say there is one saving grace in this film. And that is during the Skimbleshanks moment. Because they cast the most gayest tap dancer you could think of to play the role of Skimbleshanks, the railway cat. But you'll also see that this in this sequence, and plus also the sequence with Rumpelteazer and Mungo Jerry, that the production designers don't really know what the size of cats are supposed to be.
And I know there's variable. I get that. But it's not that variable.
Yeah, it's you'll sit there and like, wait, are these supposed to be kittens? How big are they supposed to be? Especially during the big dance down the staircase with Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer.
This movie shouldn't exist. Like, I haven't seen it yet, but this movie shouldn't exist. Having to ask these questions exactly is why this movie shouldn't exist.
Oh. And then, if that
was fever,
enough, yes. If
that wasn't enough, we also have Ray Winstone as the character Growl Tiger.
Ray Winstone.
Yes.
In this movie.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
is this the part that Guy Ritchie stepped in and filmed? Is that?
I've been sitting on this one waiting to reveal to you that Ray Winstone's in this movie.
This is the reason we should do this on video. Jesus Christ.
So are you ready for cats?
Wait till Bullet Tooth comes out. It'd be great.
I just fucking watch this movie.
All right, gang, we'll be right back after we have witnessed the 2019 film adaptation of Cats.
Jellicle Cat carries a sawed-off shotgun and a trench coat.
Stupid cats. Cats, I'm a kitty cat, and I dance, and I dance. Cats, I'm a kitty cat, and I dance, and I dance. Cats, I'm a kitty cat, and I dance, and I dance. Cats, I'm a kitty cat, and I dance, and I dance. Cats, I'm a kitty cat, and I dance. I'm a kitty cat, and I'm meow meow meow, and I'm meow meow meow. Cat, I'm a kitty cat, and I'm meow meow meow, and I'm meow meow meow. Cat, I'm a kitty cat, and I dance, and I dance. Cat, I'm a kitty cat, and I dance, and I dance. I say sexy things to myself while I'm dancing. I say sexy things to myself while I'm dancing.
Hi there, fun seekers! Are you looking for cinema that is absolutely 100% independently made, but also extremely unique and outside of the box? Well, look no further than Troma Pictures and the Troma Now streaming service. Watch.troma.com is your home for everything from Roy Kaufman and his band of very fun individuals. Everything from The Toxic Avenger and beyond at your fingertips. Only $4.99 a month, but your first 30 days are free. Did I say free? Yes, they're free. So what are you waiting for? Go to watch.trauma.com and sign up. Also available on your Apple and Android devices, on the Roku Stick, and also on the Fire Stick. Let's get freaky.
No, we watched so many good movies.
I know. This was a great month. It's such great high quality.
Oh, absolutely.
And by high quality, I talk of Cat Shit, which was the 2019 movie Cats.
On a seemingly unrelated note, I do have a quick game. It's very fast. Did you know that there are three directors that have won Best Picture and also the Razzie for Worst Picture?
Is Tom? I'm guessing Tom's one of them.
Tom is one of them. Yeah. Can you take a guess at the others?
Francis Ford Coppola?
Good guess, but no.
Quentin Tarantino?
Also a good guess, but no.
Scorsese?
No, I wish. Take that guy down a peg.
Ridley Scott?
Also not Ridley Scott.
Michael Bay.
It should be Michael Bay. He should have won so many Best Picture nominees or Oscars. No, our first one is Kevin Costner.
Okay.
Dances with Wolves and The Postman. Yeah.
And The Postman. Yeah, exactly. And the other is Peter Farrelly because he directed Movie 43. And this shocked me, Green Book.
I did not know that.
I also did not know that.
I did not know that either. I did not know he was the one who directed Movie 43.
One at least checks out.
Yeah.
He got Green Book?
Yeah.
Got Green Book. That was the time when all the keep in mind that was during the time period when all the comedic directors were getting serious.
Yeah, they saw roles. Adam McKay make the shift.
Yep.
And they were like, yep, I can do that too.
Oh, well, maybe. I'm like,
no, you can't, honey. I'm sorry. That's not in the cards for you, Pete. Hey, this movie looked so cheap. It was shocking.
It was awful. And my first hot take, first of all, I love cats. I don't think I've ever said that on this show or maybe out loud to a human being since college. I love Cats, the musical.
I like the musical just fine. And I have a lot of lore questions. And so I can't wait to get in the weeds with you.
If this movie would have been everything that it was, and I say this with a few caveats, very specific. My notes on this movie are very specific caveats. If this movie was physical costume and digital set, I think it would have been just fine.
I think this is a fun juxtaposition from Theodore Rex, because Theodore Rex was no computers when maybe there should have been some computers. And this was all computers when maybe there
should have been some practical effects.
Yeah, there absolutely. I think the cast was okay.
I think the cast was pretty good. That's actually my next note was, if you can look past the graphics, the opening was pretty okay. Like the dance was good. That sounded good.
Yeah.
Well, everything was fine until we got to Rebel Wilson.
You're always going to get a Rebel Wilson.
I remember when I went to go see it in the theater, the film kind of had me rooting for it until we got to Gumby Cat. And I'm like sitting there and going, okay, yeah, the special effects look extremely shitty, but they're trying so hard and these people are actually talented dancers and blah, 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 blah. And, oh, there goes Rebel Wilson. Okay. With the movie, and at that point it really was a train wreck, like it was starting up, but maybe it could be forgiven, but then once that scene happened it was
full-on fever dream at that point.
I can imagine the
guy in Red Dragon when he was set on fire in the chair and
I wasn't ready down.
Just imagine Philip Seymour Hoffman in a wheelchair set on fire, but instead of going that slow, he's going down a ski slope.
Yeah.
That's what this movie's direction went right when Rebel Wilson came on the screen.
Well, and my thing is, what world is this movie supposed to be? Like, what are we rooted in?
I don't understand that, because I spent a lot of time trying to figure out why the graphics were so upsetting, and it was part of that.
I will tell you what it is.
The movie did look like AI, and this was my first time watching it in Ultra HD 4K, and which, by the way, does not do this movie any favors.
No.
But watching it in Ultra HD 4K, I was like, God, this does look like AI art.
My biggest problem with the entire movie, and I think this speaks to what you both were talking about, is they cannot decide on a scale, and the scale is fucked, and it throws everything out of whack.
Like, yeah, the scale is so off in this film.
The scene, the scene in the bedroom, and I can't
remember. Mungo Jerry and Roman Keith.
Mungo Jerry scene.
Not only in the bedroom, but when they're going down the stairs.
Well, the pearls that she's wearing when they drape the pearls around her are as big as the settee.
They're so big.
Like, and the rings are supposed to fit around a cat's paws. Have you seen a cat? Like, everything. I mean, like Lacey said, I don't think the people that made this movie know what a cat looks like or have ever seen a cat in their entire life.
And I recognize that my sense of proportion re-cats is off because I have had, up until this point in my life, extremely small cats.
Yeah, and now you
and
have
now a, I have a huge cat.
A Theodore Rex cat, yes.
I do. And I recognize that about myself, but I'm still looking at this and I'm like, I don't think that's right.
And I understand that cats has to be based in some sense in some sort of magical world, right? I mean, for it to work, it has to have some magic to it. But the scale has to be accurate, or you're out of it completely from Jump Street.
And you also have to have you make sure you have good quality on the any of the moments where you're actually going to be seeing the character in costume, like Judi Dench at the last 5 minutes of the film. I mean, this film was such a high budgeted movie, yet she raises her hand to show her aged human hand on the cat, and you can clearly tell around the cuff of her wrist that is a coat that she's wearing, and they did not do any of the hems properly because it had that look of when a piece of fake fur is slowly starting to unravel.
Yeah.
And fly away. You saw that on her sleeve.
It was very, we'll fix it in post.
Yeah. Who lit all the candles?
Great question.
Magical Mr. Mistopheles. I mean, didn't you see when he was lighting the candles?
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. That's a valid point, I guess. And also, we're immediately greeted with the wanted signs.
Yes.
Oh.
They just really told us this is the bad guy instantly.
This is where I started realizing they were trying to ham-fist a plot in the movie.
And the idea of the heavy layer implies that there is also a judicial system and like a political system in this world.
If we want to get in the weeds about the lore, we can do that now. But I do have a couple of other questions.
Sure.
The top one being, why is the Rum Tum Tugger song in a Pepsi commercial from the year 2000?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, every time I've seen Cats done twice on stage, and every time I have, seen the show, it's never been that way. Rum Tum Tugger was usually, very Tim Curry-esque every time
I've
seen it.
Yeah.
And I think Jason Derulo did just fine. Like, his job was fine. It was the direction that I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Especially when he's, like, after, the very first lyric, where the Rum-Tum Tugger is a terrible cat, and then all of a sudden he's like, and she's, like, sniffing him like, oh, he smells so great. What is this?
My other point about Jason Derulo and the dancing as a whole is, they don't know how cats move.
No. They don't. In the movie. No.
And all of the weird, you can tell, wire work.
Yeah.
It works on stage, but in a movie, they're supposed to be moving like cats, especially in this movie.
Well, and I think I said this about Theodore Rex. A lot of cable work in this movie.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of obvious cable work. Yeah, there's a lot of really obvious cheap cable work. But that sequence bothered me a lot, and as a fan of Cats, I think you'll appreciate this. The way that they did the Rum Tum Tugger sequence in such a way that clearly whoever planned it out did not even listen to the lyrics.
No.
No.
It's about how he's lazy and prissy and bitchy.
Did they let Jason Derulo do it? Like, did they?
Know.
Yeah, because it was very horny, and it was very like, where my bitch is at.
Let's go to the club, which is a milk bar that exists in this world.
Oh yeah, yeah. Where was Malcolm McDowell at? Because there had a
milk right. Bar. Where's the Maloko?
Straight up milk bar.
Yeah. Again, what are we supposed to believe this world is?
Yes, I don't.
Oh, and then if that wasn't enough, we were constantly then break away from Rum Tub Tugger to have Rebel Wilson literally catcall him on the sides, making jokes about, I could do that dance too. Watch me. Stop milking it.
And then she's murdered. Is she murdered?
No, she is.
She's
disappeared.
She's macabinied.
Yeah, she's disappeared. Well, that, she's renditioned.
I have questions about that. When macabiny does that to you, does it kill you?
No, you're now on a barge.
You're now on the river, barge.
Which is, by the way, the barge is cat-sized.
Yeah. You're in a barge.
I don't know what that means in this universe.
You're in a barge in the middle of the Thames, which has been designed for you, and you're stuck on that barge with Ray Winstone.
Yeah,
is what's
which
going
is
on.
Weird. A weird choice. Well, not a weird choice, but a weird choice for Ray to make. That's
this
for
is,
sure.
This is, this is where they're really now trying to layer on the plot, because first of all, they made the white cat Victoria and the main focus all of a sudden. And then all of a sudden...
And she did great. It's not that actor's fault. She did a lovely job.
I definitely am going to get to her because I think she was shit on so much by this movie.
They made that woman thrash around in a pillowcase. That's not cool.
The pillowcase was cat-sized.
But
right?
Still don't know what that means.
But the trash cans were four times as big as the pillowcase.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I have so many problems with the scale. That's all I'm going
to
talk about.
To say something is cat-sized is rendered utterly useless in the
it
context
you
of this
are
movie.
Correct. You are correct in that
which
statement.
Cat?
I will give you that.
Jenny any dots in the middle of the number or Jenny any dots at the beginning of the
was
number?
Is she to scale with the mice, which are the size of... apparently a pea in this movie.
Can we talk about Jenny any dots here and the
We didn't, but okay.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Oh, that's I mean yeah,
I'm not a fan of her anyway.
Well, we have the sequence where she unzips her fur to reveal
deeply
another
upsetting.
Layer of fur. I mean, in the Broadway show, if you've never seen the Broadway show, the way that it's done is a bunch of cats surround Jenny Any Dots, and then she emerges like she did a costume change.
Yeah, it's like the Wizard of Oz when they do the trick to put the ruby slippers on her feet.
Yeah, it's very old school style, you know, effect on a stage show. But no,
perfectly cute.
Yeah, here in the movie, it becomes body horror all of a sudden.
What in the world is happening?
It's like
is that molting?
They contacted David Cronenberg and said, interpret how you would a cat shedding its winter coat.
Oh, and David Cronenberg said, call my son. And he said, okay.
He's like, I've got this.
But, yeah, that was disturbing. And what's also disturbing is the fact that they gave this movie a fucking plot.
Yeah.
It's like Chris even told me, he said, you know, movie-going audiences, they don't do abstract. And I said, well, explain why all that jazz was a hit.
Yeah, right? Like, it would have been fine without a plot. It would have been better without a plot. I'm very
sorry for this hard left. How is it that James Corden is so unlikable?
I don't know.
Just
is.
Holy... By the way, we did a little bit of research on this movie. Do you know who originated the role that James Gordon played in the movie? I can't remember the character's name. It's some weird.
Oh, Bustopher.
Yeah, Bustopher.
Do you know who originally or the? Do you know who originated that part on stage?
No. Who did?
That was Brian Blessed.
Jesus.
Wow.
I bet that was fun.
Yeah. Honestly. Oh, it was absolutely fun. Are you kidding me?
It's way more fun than the bizarre new arrangement of Mungo Jerry and Rumple Teaser that's like weird and sexy now. And
now
I
want to say this. I have one critique about that sequence. I have one critique about this.
Is it
character.
That it's there?
No.
It's all of it.
You know what pulled me completely out of that? Mungo Jerry, a male character, was a calico.
That's true. It's exceedingly rare. Very, very rare.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're telling me that this jellicle ass cat is a calico and a dude. Nope, I'm out. That's what pulled me out.
That's fair. I was upset the second I heard the song, because I like the Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer song, and they made it weird, and I'm like, they're siblings and they're kittens, and you made them sexy, and I don't like it.
And they fuck. They absolutely have sex.
Deeply uncomfortable.
Yes. Deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah. And you know, and I
don't remember the stage show being this horny.
No, it's certainly not.
And what makes it even more disturbing is the horniness is just the way that all the cats just give this horny vibe off, especially Judi Dench. And then you got Victoria, who is like the innocent, literal innocent virgin white.
She's Janet from Rocky Horror.
She really is.
Just not as not she doesn't become as corrupted, and it's just I felt so bad for Francesca Hayward. I really did, because she was given the weight of this movie,
and that guy too, the guy who played the tabby that sang a lot of the leads.
Yeah,
he was really good too.
Speaking of good, there is no song in any stage performance that will ever have the emotional effect that Memory does on me. And I think it's just because of when I was born and when I was going to school, and everybody did that song for auditions.
It was
and shit.
The musical at the time until Rent hit. It was like the mega musical.
It countered between this one and Phantom of the Opera. I mean, Andrew Lloyd Webber basically owned it, with Les Mis wanting a piece of the pie, going, get out of my fucking way.
But if you're going to give that song to someone, you fucking give it to Jennifer Hudson.
That's true.
I've never seen it performed that way. And holy shit.
She's very good.
Again, if I could just close my eyes.
Yeah.
Or if I could see the raw footage of them before the computers got in there, maybe.
Release that.
Release the raw cut.
The thing don't say that about this movie. But the thing is with that moment with her, is not only does the incredibly horrible CGI, she's got the worst CGI job in this whole film, the incredibly horrible CGI job on her face while she's singing, but I don't know who thought that the cat needed cry snot.
That was a pretty weird choice.
But it just distracts, especially when you're watching it on the big screen and suddenly you see the snot coming out of the nose. It is so distracting. And even the second time I went to go see this, audience members were holding up napkins to the screen to wipe her nose. And I was like, this is supposed to be the biggest, most emotional moment of Cats. And instead you got moviegoers, Rocky Horror Picture showing this sequence by taking a napkin to help her blow her nose.
Yeah.
I don't know why they did that to her.
So, Lacey, as we move through this movie, Lacey has a theory that I thought was pretty interesting.
I'm excited.
And that is that old Deuteronomy, who's had 99 lives,
mm-hmm.
this is all ritual magic when they send somebody.
A lot of questions about this part.
to kill them, and then she gains that life.
She's taking their lives.
She set this whole thing up over hundreds of years.
She's like a life sucker.
Speaking of which, did you know that Judi Dench was supposed to originate two roles actually in Cats?
Well, if I remember right, one of them was supposed to be Grisabella. Yeah.
Yes, she was originally cast as Jenny Annie Dots and Grisabella somehow. and then at the very, like, she has publicity photos and the whole bit, and like right before opening she had an injury and had to withdraw, and they had to cast two people
to do her
to
one
replace
role.
Her
the things that they made her and Ian McKellen do in this movie.
I really liked Ian McKellen in this part. He's perfect to play that character.
But why when you have him sucking milk out of a tray.
The thing that got me was at one point everybody is like getting entranced and getting all whatever cat-like, and he's like meow 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 meow, and I was like, what the
is happening? Yeah. They made Ian McClellan do that. They made Judy Dench stick her leg up at a 45 degree angle from her bottom.
She was like going, "Ee, look, I'm doing my Jenny Craig."
I also want to say, and this is very nitpicky, but again, I am so sorry that I'm going to be super nitpicky. The famous McCavity song, states that he's a ginger cat
and that he's very tall and thin.
And he is none of those things in this movie.
None of those things.
Okay, I want to know, what was your reaction when you saw Idris Elba as Naked Kitty?
I have way bigger questions about that number, honestly.
Oh, like why Taylor Swift came in to do the shimmy shimmy on her titties?
Is that there's a shaker full of catnip, but also McCavity is catnip, and also he turns the other cats into catnip. Is it drugs? Are they snorting him?
He's the spice, the melange.
If they were going to build
spice,
a plot,
must flow from McCavity.
If they were building a plot around this movie, why didn't they have him be like the magician before? Something to establish that he had magic shit. Instead of just like being this grifter cat. And Taylor Swift was bad in this movie. I like Taylor Swift. She was bad.
Why did they make her try to do a British?
Was that?
Why were they trying to get her to do a British accent? I don't. Just do your cats. Just do the accent that you have. It's fine.
My problem is we all know for a fact that Taylor Swift can sing and sing very well. She did not do that in this movie. She
chose not to do it.
And the thing is also, you know, speaking of Taylor Swift, she wrote the lyrics to the new song.
The one
I'm trying to pretend that didn't happen.
Did she write them with Andrew Lloyd Webber?
Yeah, he did the music score and she did the lyrics. So she like wrote it as a poem and then handed it to him. And that's what farted out of him was.
He had given up by that point.
In Andrew Lloyd Webber's defense, that is why the musical Cats exists.
Sure.
Is because he was doing an exercise as a young composer of what can I make out of poetry so that I don't have to try to be a lyricist. I can just work on that. And that's why I found this T.S. Eliot book of poems, and that's what ended up being Cats.
But that music is a lot better than what he did to...
Yeah.
Some ghosts. I mean,
it's true.
It was just, I'm like, you know, even when she tried doing her version during the closing credits, I was like, this is not a good song. It's like Madonna. They did better with Madonna with You Must Love Me for
Evita.
Yeah. And I mean, that got an Oscar nomination. There's no way in hell Invisible Ghost was going to get a nomination because it was look how this happened. I wonder how it happened. I'm going to sing like this. The whole song.
It was not good.
Yeah. Hey, you guys saw Batman versus Superman, right?
Yes.
My biggest problem with that movie was the fact that any time Wonder Woman would appear, they would use her theme song.
Yes.
Full volume, and it's that electric violin shit.
Mm-hmm.
They did shit like that in this movie. With like weird synthesizers out of nowhere.
Did. It was, I think it was an attempt to capture that opening of Cats, the synthy opening.
Sure.
But it did not.
It did not work. Read. And they did it at weird times in the middle of songs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was not accurate. Hey, I have some questions for T.S. Eliot. Can we go over them?
One moment before we go to T.S. Eliot.
Eliot?
Before we get to the man who's responsible for this stuff, there are two other cats I do want to point out. Actually three. This was just a brief one. Am I the only one who thought the magical Mr. Mistopheles looked like Johnny Depp meets Robert Smith?
That's fair.
That brings me to a really interesting point about this entire movie. Is I'm going to call it ear placement.
I think a lot of these cats would be a lot.
They were on very tops of their heads.
Yeah, that's not like, where a cat's ears are.
No, and I think that your statement is because of that.
Yes.
Like, I think the movie suffers from that in every single possible way. Like, the choices that were made.
But especially on him. And also, I want to know, when did that character ever in the Broadway show explain or basically inform us that he was not only a bumbling idiot, but a hopeless romantic?
Yeah, I didn't love that choice. I kind of respect that choice as opposed to some of the others, because at least it was a fully formed choice.
Well, they needed a third act for the character they invented.
Yeah.
So they had to then, you know, add vestigial parts to these other cats that never had it before to make that character make sense. It becomes a Faustian bargain at some point.
It really is. It does.
So we have that. And then another reinterpretation that just made me just want to, you know, stretch my brain in anger was the reinterpretation of Grisabella. Because in the original show, you know, at least they remember that she used to be a glamorous cat and now she's old and haggard, which with casting Jennifer Hudson in the role,
it
did failed. Not
Why would you do that to her?
You failed, you know. But not only that, but it was in the original show, she is seen as a pariah and an outcast from the rest of the cats. But we're never given an explanation why, because we don't need an explanation why. And in this film, they're like, yeah. And then she got caught up with McCavity. And I'm like, oh, great. So
but
she's
then they don't even really they don't even really explain that.
It's A-line. Then it is A-line in this thing. That's it.
Then she went with McCavity and everybody's eyes go, oh, yeah.
So it's
we don't even know why McCavity's so bad. So, and they sing an entire song about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it really just sort of describes him. They don't even listen to that.
The third cat that I want to focus on, and as another one of the people in the film that I felt bad for, because this was the sassiest Skimbleshanks I've ever seen.
I loved it my entire life.
And the guy doing the dancing was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah
it was. And doing his cosplay as the Argentinian from Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
He is Royal Ballet, by the way.
This
like,
scene,
of course. He is dancer. Like, dancer.
Yeah, he is.
This scene is marred by two things. One, the issues with the proportions again when they're dancing along the train tracks.
And sometimes they are smaller than a single slat of wood, and sometimes they're big enough to tap dance on the edge, and I don't know.
Yes. So you got that problem, and then the way they decide to end this moment by doing this like full on Xanadu raise in the sky moment.
Yeah.
And then disappear.
Yeah, that was pretty weird. I think that's about the time my mind went.
mine went a lot earlier than that. I started focusing on a lot of details around that Rebel Wilson shit. I started just looking at minutia at that point.
I think that's probably why I got in the weeds with my questions for T.S. Eliot, because I saw that and I saw those two cats that had Chuck Taylors on for some reason.
And it might have been a funny bit if cat skin once.
Yeah.
But then it becomes a plot point.
Yeah, because it all of a sudden it was a setup for the escape. You know.
Gross.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And the fact that, you know, when McCavity is denied going to the Heaviside Lair, which is nowhere in the fucking original show.
No, it was never even an option.
No.
I don't understand what the... Okay, so the plot of the movie, McCavity is kidnapping these cats. Or renditioning
or wanting to go...
So that he can force old Deuteronomy to choose him to go up in the Heaviside layer to be reincarnated.
But there's still a shit ton of cats.
There's like so many
for
cats.
For her to choose.
So how do you enter the... this is... I'm sorry, we'll get there. We'll get there when I get to my lore question.
All right, let's go with your lore question.
So I'm gonna start light. My first one is for T.S. Eliot personally. Were these names normal for cats at the time, or were they always weird?
It's a good question.
You know, it's a good question, but people still name their cats weird shit. So,
well, and the fact that Asparagus is Gus's real name lends credence to that.
That's true. You know? The age-honored tradition, time-honored tradition of naming your cat after food. How much can you tell me about the Heaviside Lair? I need to know a lot more than what was given to me. Like,
well,
so much more.
Considering in the Broadway show, you get there by being blasted through the roof on a tire.
Well, but sometimes it's
versus,
a staircase.
Yeah, or sometimes it's a staircase you walk up on. In this case, you get on board a giant chandelier and get melted by the sun.
Well, that's a night. So congratulations. Breaking this down. First, how do you enter the pageant?
You're just a cat.
You've got to
be a Jellicle cat. Well, you got to be a Jellicle cat.
And I have a question about that, but we'll get to that later.
So is this supposed to be like purgatory where all the cats are at?
Is this purgatory?
We don't see a human.
And then the cats say, congratulations, you're the saddest cat, so we're going to make you start over.
Judy Dench is taking that cat's soul and adding it to hers.
And so, like, do most cats just die? But the sad ones get reincarnated? They got to do it again because they're sad? You weren't happy enough at the time of your death, so you got to go back and do
it. You're too happy.
Is there natural death in this world?
I don't know.
Maybe,
that's the question.
Maybe when we see the human, because, you know, the cats don't really show themselves until after the human goes away and she tosses the cat in the bag.
Yeah.
So maybe that is where Angelina died.
Like snapped her neck or something?
Yeah. And all the other, because if you notice, the lighting changed at that point and everything.
She's straight fucking
murdered.
Kobe's that bag. You know, like, it's not unheard. It wouldn't be unheard of for that cat to snap its neck in that bag and then come out. Then they all come out.
And then they all come out. So
and
we
don't see human ever again.
And then Deuteronomy shows up and then all the cats dance. And I'm not sure, do they control the dancing or are they not in control of themselves?
At some point, they are not in control of themselves.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me, which raises the question, does the dance trigger Deuteronomy's weird, sad cat pageant? Or does Deuteronomy trigger the dance? Doing my weird, sad cat pageant.
You know what I think?
Everybody dance.
I think she's forcing them to dance because she gets off on it.
I think she's preparing them so that she can take their soul and add it to hers. The more I think about it, and there was a weird, I know it was.
I've also got another question. Why are we thinking this deep about cats?
There's a cardinal. There's a cardinal compass on the floor of the room. But
it sure looked like a
like
seance.
A pentagram, didn't it? It looked like a pentagram. It's red, like.
And they have to wait for the Jellicle moon.
Yeah, this is definitely ritual magic.
And like, am I supposed to be sad for Gus that he didn't get murdered? I was supposed to feel bad for him, like, oh, Gus, you didn't get to die.
Well,
I
can tell that's why. Hold on. Now
it's looking up like that could have been me.
This whole thing is coming together for me. Deuteronomy loves Gus and refuses to take his soul, so he will live forever in her world.
Yes.
She'll never take him.
Oh, my God.
So we
suddenly became a talk show about this movie.
Yes. This raises my question. Can you choose to not be a Jellicle cat?
No, not in this world.
It
once
doesn't
you're
sound
chosen,
like it.
Once you're chosen. Because at one point, Deuteronomy Dench tells Victoria, well, you're not a Jellicle cat
yet.
Like, yet you will be.
And she's like, at the end of the movie, when the sun's coming up, she's like, you are like the most Jellicle or whatever.
Yeah. Next year, it's your turn.
Which brings me to my next question. It's like right at sundown when the movie starts. Like the moon is just bam, right up there. And then at the beginning or the end of the movie, hey, a new day has begun. Is this every day? Do they do this every day?
Yeah, this explains why the cats run around so much at night, because they're doing the Jellicle ball every night.
They're doing it every night? I don't know.
I do think it's a specific night. I do think it's a specific night,
once a year or whatever.
When the moon is in a specific place and everything is aligned for her to
and
take another soul.
Face inside the clouds.
Yeah, that's when she takes the soul.
Wow. So wild that so many people said yes to this thing. It's so wild to me.
We got to make some sense of this damn shit. I mean,
I do think I feel the worst. If I'm going to feel the worst about somebody in this film, I kind of feel the worst for Jason Derulo.
Right. Because
besides erasing his dick, I mean, yeah, his career hurt after
this. Well, this was the thing that was going to break him as, he would. I get the feeling that this was because he was giving it his all.
Yeah.
He's a theater person originally, I think.
Yeah, I do. I think so too. I think this was going to be his crossover. This was going to be his big one that goes into
and it didn't.
The next phase of his career. Where if you're Ian McClellan or Judy Dench, you can walk away from this and still be fine. If you're Taylor Swift, obviously you did fine. Yeah. If you're any of the Broadway actors, are fine. They're still on stage. They're still tearing it up. They're still getting cast. Mm-hmm. You can't apparently stop James Corden. He is just going to continue to be James Corden.
This movie did affect Rebel Wilson, though. This film.
I think that's for the best.
This film was the movie that was the catalyst for her to lose the weight, because she saw herself as Jenny Anydots in the movie. And said, is that what I look like in real life? And so she even admitted, she said, the movie Cats in a roundabout way bullied me into losing weight.
Which is wild, because her weight is not the problem I had with her in this movie.
No, not at all.
Not even a little bit.
Not even
for a second.
We all saw her split her legs out and hugely scratch her crotch, and she went, oh, I look fat.
Yeah.
We're like, no, we're seeing what you're doing, and it's insane.
We saw her twerk on an ottoman.
We did. And she said, I've got to lose weight. I thought, ma'am, you've got to get off the drugs.
You got to stop acting.
Ma'am,
you need to hire
your agent, because...
Yeah, something.
Like ever since Pitch Perfect, girl, you've been going downhill.
Something rough. So my last question for T.S. Eliot, I do have one more. And that's, where can I get that good nitrous? Because he obviously knows.
Chris asked the same thing. He was like, what drugs were involved in the creation?
Laudanum. A lot of laudanum. Yeah. Also, again, cats are... All of us have had and have cats, right?
Yes.
And a lot of people do, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a
fairly,
normal
I would say,
thing.
Second most common pet to own.
And they don't know, A, how catnip works, B, how cats
work. Or what it looks like.
C, what a cat looks like.
Mm-hmm.
B, how a cat acts or walks. The thing that pissed me off the most about this movie, and I know it's done in the stage show sometimes, I've seen it done, is decide how a cat gives shit to people. Decide that, and then go with that. Let that be the basis of your world building. Are you going to give it to them by hand? Are you going to put it in your mouth and hand it to their mouth? Weird shit. Mm-hmm. Just make some decisions and stick with them in your world.
Whatever your weird decision is, everything about this is weird from the get. The book of poems is weird. But whatever choice you've made, you have to make the choice consciously and stick to the choice.
Yeah. That's... So they're not gonna take this, you know, if we just do cats, then audience won't like the surreality and the non-linearness of it. But we're going to make a movie that is surreal and nonlinear and see if they like it. Just do Cats.
More confusing than it was to begin with. Yes. When I saw Cats on stage, I didn't worry so much about what the heavy side layer was. I wasn't concerned about
it. You were there to see the dancing cats.
I saw the dancing cats and they were lovely. Yeah, and that's the all it was. Music's great.
Like, yes. Everything now they was also, good.
Now, the other thing that was just off with this movie also, especially for those who have seen the stage show, is Judi Dench's dialogue at the end of the movie, the last 5 minute soliloquy that she gives. That's not really even a soliloquy. That's not even really a soliloquy in the original Broadway show. They took elements from Deuteronomy's number after he's introduced in Act One and incorporated that into that whole thing.
Yep.
And for some reason, they really put emphasis on the line, a cat is not a dog, in the movie.
Yeah, and I don't remember that from the stage show. It's been a few years.
I don't remember that either.
I felt like that then they had to go back and remind us that a cat is what a cat is. At the end of a movie called Cats, full of cats.
We've shown you that a cat could be a lot of things, and I need you to know that none of the things that you saw were cats. you know, it was one of many pieces of dialogue that they inserted into this movie, I guess, for like the sociopaths in the audience that don't know what it looks like to feel feelings, and so they had to say the feelings.
Yeah, for sure, right? If you didn't feel anything during memory, let me tell you how to feel something.
This is how she felt, in case you were wondering. Yeah.
Well, she's also a psychopath, because
we knew you were not going to have any emotional attachment to this movie, so let's mansplain it.
Well, so she's also a sociopath / psychopath, killing all these cats to take their souls in her magic rituals. So, so she had to then that number is for her to remember how to act around other cats.
And she's Yeah.
So that was the nod to the audience saying, "I don't feel emotions. I pretend I do." This is how you must talk to cats because I don't know how to do it, because I don't see them as individuals. I see them as stepping stones to my immortality.
They're like food to me.
Yes. I devour them. All of these cats dancing at my pleasure.
Wow. The call of Deuteronomy. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like the Victoria Bath of the cat world.
Yeah, she definitely bathes in the blood of these cats, and we don't get to see it. Why hasn't the guy that did Winnie the Pooh done a Cats movie? I'd love that.
Said it, so now it's going to happen. So.
Yeah, here it comes. It's going to be part
of the
challenge.
That's that question mark on that infographic I sent you guys.
Yes, it's a horror version of Cats.
This was a horror version of Cats, Roy.
So I was going to say,
we don't need a horror version.
It sounds like the two of you just can't recommend this movie.
No, I say watch it.
No, I need more people to help explain the Heaviside layer to me.
Now, I got a question. Is this the worst thing we've ever watched on this show?
No. Not by foot. No. Not even Courtney, who's only been here for a year.
Yeah.
No, God, no. Are you kidding?
I will.
Theodore Rex was worse than this.
I
disagree with that, but like, wow, it was bad.
I will have to let you all know that I actually own this movie on purpose. And the reason I own this movie on purpose is thanks to Riff Tracks. Riff Tracks does an amazing riff on this film. I lost count on how many times they make jokes about searching for the butthole cut. The dialogue that is going on during the ballet sequence, especially when the tails are sticking straight up in the air and they go, "And spray!" You know, just so many hilarious jokes.
Really weird.
It's nonstop. So whenever I want to actually enjoy Cats, I will watch it with the riff track, because the riff track is just chef's kiss.
And every time you watch it, Judy Dench claims another soul. So yes. That's great.
So you're contributing to it.
Yeah, we all are.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we all have at this point. We're all culpable.
So as we announced on the last episode, we got a third episode coming out this month to kind of cleanse our palate where we watch Rad. But also we have some sort of mystery 30-minute thing that Andy's going to show us, and we'll find out on when we actually tackle the episode.
Oh, do you not want to know now? Because I'll tell you.
Oh, no, let's wait. Go ahead. Tell us. What are we suggesting to?
It was my initial choice for unconventional musicals. I decided to do Velvet Goldmine because it is much better in terms of quality for this show. But I do want to do it. It is only 30 minutes, and we have a fairly light load this month. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you guys are familiar. It is available on Netflix. It has been available since pre-pandemic. It is 30 minutes long, and it is called The Bash Brothers, the story of Jose Canseco and Mark McGuire, starring by The Lonely Island.
Yes, I
never did see this. I'm excited.
You are going to see it, and you are going to love it.
This. This is hilarious. It
ventures from straight up comedy into like a nether realm surreality, beautiful, wild thing to watch. I watch it like five times and I love it so much.
What kills me also about the half hour special is that they, when they're doing the opening number, they are doing the whole shout out about buying beepers at Hilltop Mall. And Hilltop Mall is a real place. Well, it was a real place. They've torn the mall down since, but that's where I had my first job when I was working at Camelot Music. So to hear Hilltop Mall mention this, I was just like, wow, they did their fucking research.
I love that we both worked at Camelot Music in a mall at one point. Courtney, I will say this going into it, just so you know, you haven't lived a full and honest life until you have seen, and I won't tell you I won't tell you the content. Okay. You have to discover that on your own, but you haven't lived until you've seen Sterling K. Brown lip sync. Sia.
Wow.
Yes. That was one of the best moments of that show.
It is all so, so good.
Oh, I am more than happy to revisit this.
I knew you would be.
I can't wait. Frankly, we're back in.
I'm frankly shocked that Courtney hasn't.
She's in for a treat. This thing.
She's in for a real big treat.
It doesn't have Carol Kane in it.
This combined with Rad is definitely a fucking sorbet to cleanse the palate for months.
Yeah, we deserve it. We deserve this.
Now, we do have to talk about what we're doing in April, don't we?
Speaking of Red Hot Bangers.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, before we reveal what we're doing in April and what we're all watching in April, I do want to reveal to our listening audience the 20 films that have qualified for our anniversary month.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
So, and so... this might be the first time for Courtney to watch some of these films. So for those who don't know, we started this last year and we decided we're going to do this every year for our anniversary. We're going to look back at movies and revisit them to see how we feel now versus then. And the way that we do it, since there's so many movies on the list, is that we put them in a randomizer and we have the randomizer choose 20 titles. And then in June, on the show, we will announce the three films that get chosen from that 20. But these are the 20 that qualified. First and foremost, I died when this one came up because first, I'm screaming too soon. But secondly, we were talking about it so much during the Zubinstein Awards. The first movie that came up was Aline.
I'm very excited if that one if we actually get to rewatch that, I'm very excited for it.
So that one came up. The next one that came up was Hentai Kamen.
Which, oh, wow.
We have to get special guests for that one if we rewatch it.
Yes. So
that. The next one is Can't Stop the Music.
Solid choice.
Next one after that is Rats, Night of Terror.
Jesus.
The next one after that is Popeye the Movie.
Okay, I mean, that one I've actually seen.
Yeah, we've done worse than Popeye.
After that is what you speaking of, we've done worse than Popeye. The next one after that is the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, wow.
The next one after that is House of the Dead.
Yes, let's do that one again.
The next one after that is Bad Ben.
I cannot. If I have any influence over this randomizer, it will be for Bad Ben.
The next one after that is Mother Goose Rockin' Rhyme.
No, god damn it.
The next one after that is Dr. Caligari.
I would love to watch that again.
The next one after that is The Good Exorcist.
Okay.
The next one after that is The Curve.
Yes.
The next one after that is Honky.
No. Ooh. Tough.
The next one after that is The Vampire Happening.
I wouldn't mind it.
The next one after that, The Terror of Tiny Town.
God damn it. No.
The next one after that, Dot and the Kangaroo. The next one after that, The Room.
Too soon. You want to talk about too soon?
The next one after that, Revisiting Cop Rock. Followed by Evil Speak.
Yep, good.
And then our very last film chosen, Spider Baby.
Okay. I mean, it's a better list than last year.
Yeah, it seems like there's not any just like...
Honky.
Horrifyingly mid choices.
Yeah, that's true. It's either...
It's either really bad or really good. And yep. I will say this, if I'm almost tempted to veto Honky if Honky comes up because it's that bad.
I would support your decision.
It's that bad.
I would support a unified veto of Honky if that were to happen.
So, what are we doing next month?
Yes. We are...
Go ahead.
Okay, so we're going highbrow, something we haven't done in a while. We're doing so all documentaries. Fancy. Yeah, so all documentaries. From what I understand, I'm the odd man out on this one. Courtney, what was your choice for documentary?
So my choice, it kind of is a true crime story, but not in the classic murdery true crime way. I have chosen, which you can watch on Pluto TV, The Woman Who Wasn't There. And I am loath to tell you anything about it. I just want you to experience it.
Okay.
Because if I tell you what it's about already, you're going to walk in with a preconceived notion. And I just want it to wash over you. Okay. Because I found it randomly without knowing what it was about the first time I saw it. And it blew me away. what are you doing, Roy?
So mine is also true crime. And how I found this one was originally I was going to choose Grizzly Man. And I went to go see if that was available on Tubi, and it was. But then I guess because it was directed by Werner Herzog, I don't know why, because these two films have nothing to do with each other. But the very next thing it recommended is that if you like this, we recommend to you Albert Fish in Sin He Found Salvation.
God.
So I was like, wow. Holy shit, they made a documentary about Albert Fish. So we will be doing...
Holy shit.
Albert Fish in Sin He Found Salvation. For those who don't know what this is about a man who was a cannibalistic human, also sadomasochistic, and a serial killer who would lure children to their deaths in Depression-era New York City.
The basis of, like, Hannibal Lecter and just so many movie killers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the one that I chose because I can't believe this exists. So that's my choice. What's yours, Andy?
So, Jesus. So mine, I'm guessing you both have seen. But when it came out in 2005, it was very popular. Everybody talked about it. And then I haven't heard a single person talk about it for like,
oh my God,
10 years. And I have been obsessed. There is something I have been obsessed with since I was a child. And when I say this, you're going to know what it is.
Oh my God.
I have been obsessed with comedy for comedians my entire life.
Mm.
Like, people tell jokes. Like, you have a set that you work your entire life. And then there's comedy for comedians that right. they tell each other to make themselves laugh. I've been obsessed with that concept my entire life. When this came out, and with the loss in the comedy community of the of some of the greats in the last 5 years.
Me too.
I thought it was time that we revisited the Aristocrats.
All righty.
Fantastic choice.
God, because nobody talks about it anymore.
What a
nobody
wave.
Knows who Richard Jenny is. Nobody knows. You know, Richard Lewis just died this week.
Yep.
That's true.
They, people only know him from now I can't think of the name of the show.
Curb
Your Enthusiasm. Thank you.
Well, the same with the same with
Bob Saget.
Well, not only Bob Saget, but oh God, what's his face?
There's so many. I could name 10 of them.
There's 100 people in it.
Yeah.
People
Gilbert
you wouldn't
Godfrey.
Expect.
Gilbert Godfrey. Thank you. Gilbert Godfrey. I mean, a lot of people only know Gilbert Godfrey as the Aflac duck or Iago from Aladdin. And this man is like
he was one of the more prolific assassins.
He was an assassin of comedy.
I was floored when I watched this the first time by Bob Saget. Because up to this point, you knew Bob Saget from two things. America's mm-hmm. Funniest Home Videos and Full House.
Squeaky and clean, right?
All of a sudden, you get Bob Saget and you're like, holy shit.
Oh, wow. Is it? Yeah.
It is a brilliant documentary about the history of comedy with the best comic historians you can ask for, comedians, telling one joke.
So good.
I'm excited to go back to this.
This is a major roller coaster. And also a very New York month. It really is. Because my story is very New York centric. And so the Aristocrats also kind of is.
So is Albert Fish. I mean,
This is New York Documentaries Month. Culture of the Catacombs.
This is definitely going to be a breath of fresh air after this month. Rad will be, but after the two films
we deserve it.
We deserve it. Yes.
Wow, I can't wait for us to just jackknife wildly between emotions with these three documentaries.
Welcome to Cult Cinema Catacombs.
And I know I haven't told you anything. I really feel like I can't tell you much of anything about mine without giving anything great away. But the way that these three movies are so totally different.
I can't wait. I mean, that's what we do. That's what we're here for.
I'm proud of us. We did it. We spectrumed it out.
All right, folks. So join us next time when we were going to discuss about Rad from 1986 and also the Bash Brothers. So join us next time.
Good.
Oh, it's going to be a great episode.
Talk to you then. And we promise we won't sacrifice any more souls to the Dame Judi Dench.
No, it's 2020 roar. No more small cats, only lions.
No, knowingly. We might do it. Roy's going to do it tonight when he watches that Riff Tracks.
All right, folks. See you next time.